In 1 Peter 1, the Bible says, "As he which hath called you is holy, so be ye holy in all manner of conversation." That is, in every aspect of how we live. Easier said than done, right? We have to learn to think spiritually. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, as you think spiritually about the challenges of daily life. Here's Elizabeth Elliott to challenge and encourage us to holy living.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend, Elizabeth Elliott, reading again today some stories for children. First of all, I want to read a letter from the mother of some teenagers. And I found this one so cheering because I get so many letters that are quite the opposite. She said, "I wanted to send you one of our recent family letters and pictures so you would know who is writing, and I also want to put in a good word for teenagers. If I had known what fun teens are, I'd have had lots more children. When Angela turns 13 this week, we will have three of them, and I must say these are the happiest days of my life. I enjoyed little ones, but they were lots of work. Now I'm enjoying the big kids in a whole new way, and with lots less work. I think it comes from several things. Number one, establishing obedience and respect at an early age, so it isn't challenged now. Number two, a mom who is always at home. Number three, hardly any TV. And number four, living a consistent, honest life before them, at home as well as away from home. Thank you so much for those four principles. And for you young parents who might be listening, think about those four: establishing obedience and respect at an early age, the mother always being at home, hardly any TV allowed, and living a consistent and honest life before them. I think that last is by far the most important. Your children are watching, aren't you, children? You are watching your parents, and you want to do what they do. So may God make those parents faithful. Now I want to read you a story about when I was a little girl. This is a true story. It's from my book called The Shaping of a Christian Family. The life lived and the things loved are what form a child's character and tastes. It would be impossible to exaggerate the importance to our family of Gale Cottage in Franconia, New Hampshire. Cottage is not the word one would choose nowadays, but in the 19th century, any house where people spent the summer was a cottage. All along the coast of New England, there are huge houses built at that time, all with servants' quarters and many bedrooms, nevertheless called cottages. Our cottage was not huge, and its style nothing like Cape Cod's. It was what we would now call a lodge, built entirely of wood, inside and out, with no plaster anywhere. There was no cellar. The house rested on, and was not fastened to, granite rocks. There were two large rooms downstairs, which we called the living room, and the parlor, mimicking the New England pronunciation of parlor, two large and two small upstairs, and two servants' rooms in the attic. My mother tells of her first visit there at the end of the summer in 1921. Her fiancé, Phil Howard, had come from Camp Allagash on Moosehead Lake in Maine, where he had been a counselor, to the Gillingham Cottage on Lake Cocknewagon in Monmouth, Maine, bringing an unusual gift to his beloved, a beautiful ashwood canoe paddle made by one of the guides at the camp and inscribed with PH for Philip Howard on one side and KG for Catherine Gillingham on the other side. The cottage was, to me, the very vestibule of heaven. How did we get there? We would leave Philadelphia on the night Pullman, the Bar Harbor Express. Do you know what a Pullman is? It's a railroad car with beds in it. I remember the delirium of joy with which I settled into the berth, my clothes safely stowed in the little hammock, fell asleep, to be awakened in New Haven by the shifting of the cars as the train was divided into different sections. I would lift the blind and see the brakeman passing with his lantern, watch the baggage trucks rolling by, and try to read in the dim light the thrillingly romantic names on the freight cars in the yards. Seaboard Airline, Lackawanna, Chicago and Northwestern, Route of the Phoebe Snow, Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe. I remember the jerking of the uncoupling and the satisfying crunch of the coupling, the loud hissing of steam, then the gentle rolling out of the station, the giant engine building up speed until the clickety-click reached the rhythm that once again put me to sleep. Clickety-click, 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 and then I would be asleep. In the morning, I woke to see the Connecticut River Valley, and it was not long before we pulled into Littleton. We were met by my grandfather's Buick and driven the 8 miles to the cottage. My stomach tightened with joy of that first glimpse of the two brick chimneys, visible as we crossed the Gale River Bridge. And then, as we turned up the driveway, I could see the beloved house, the breakfast table set in the sun on the front quarter of the porch. The porch ran all the way around the house, which was rectangular, built stockade style with 6-inch spruce blocks for walls in the lower portion, shingles above. The sound of footsteps hurrying from the kitchen on the old boards, the creak of the hinges on the massive door, which had a key 8 inches long. It was said that Uncle Will had the big iron lock and key before he built the house and had to construct a door to fit the scale. A race around the porch to see if the little cart we'd played with was still in its place, to look into the separate cabin, which was the kitchen, at the back of the porch. A pause to look at the mountains. Lafayette, Artist's Bluff, Bald Mountain, Cannon, Kinsman. Blue against the sky, always dependably the same, strong, comforting. So the Lord is round about them that fear him. The mountains waiting for us to climb them once more. In the living room, the huge fireplace with its 3-foot andirons, the green china clock on the mantel, the guns in their niche, the fishing rods cradled in bentwood hooks suspended from the ceiling, the Texas longhorns, the moose antlers, the deer head, the portrait of Uncle Will on the walls, the rocking chairs where Grandpa and Grandma Howard always sat by the heavy writing table which Uncle Will had made with his own hands, the converted kerosene lamps, the little melodeon which was used for accompaniment at our Sunday evening hymn sings. The natives came to these, including a little old lady who claimed she couldn't sing half's good's a crow. The cushioned settee with a lid which lifted to reveal a furry mechanical bear, a black lace parasol, a music box, and a mummified human child's foot, brought from some ancient tomb in Egypt by Uncle Will when he was scrounging the world for things to put in the then new Metropolitan Museum in New York. In the back parlor were crumbling leather-bound books, a set of bells, a stereopticon with magic pictures of ice caves and frozen waterfalls, astonishing in the perfection and depth of each gleaming crystal. The glass cases of moths and butterflies which Aunt Annie had lured by stretching a bedsheet in the light of a lantern on the porch at night. And upstairs were books and more books, brightly colored stuffed birds from foreign lands, Aunt Annie's flower press, a vial of attar of roses from a forgotten tomb, and life-sized paintings of improbably large brook trout that Uncle Will had caught, painted, and pasted to the door panels. There was the little room with the bird's eye maple furniture where I slept, snuggling down under a feather quilt and listening to the wind in the pines, in the white pine trees. The sound of the river flowing over the stones. And there was a poem tacked to the wall. Sleep sweetly in this quiet room, O thou, whoe'er thou art, and let no mournful yesterdays disturb thy peaceful heart, nor let tomorrow scare thy rest with thoughts of coming ill. Thy Maker is thy changeless friend. His love surrounds thee still. Forget thyself and all the world. Turn out each feverish light. The stars are watching overhead. Sleep sweetly then. good night. And I would look up at that poem over the head of the bed and listen to the sound of the wind in the pines and the river, and I slept sweetly in that quiet room. And oh, the smell of the place. Year after year, it was the same. Year after year, we rushed in and breathed that sweetness, old wood, old leather, old books, the perfume of pine and balsam and wood smoke. There's no accounting for that fragrance, but it is still there, still the same, intoxicating to us who know it, still redolent of all the years of happiness. To be removed annually from Washington Lane in Philadelphia, the hot macadam and the carbon monoxide pollution, to the cool freshness of the White Mountains was God's gift to our family. Uncle Will and Aunt Andy, who were childless, could not have dreamed when they built that unique house in 1889 that they were instruments in divine hands for the blessing of a large family so many years later. It seems to me of supreme importance for parents to try to arrange, I would almost say at any cost, some sort of getaway place for their family, to be physically removed from the scenes of ordinary life and routine is refreshment that can't be found in any other way. There was a real little attic where we found a little leather stagecoach trunk with a curved lid. Aunt Anne, niece of Aunt Annie, or somebody, had taped a sign to the top of it which said, "Why, here they are, right here in this little trunk." And there they were, toys. Gale Cottage afforded us the opportunity to study art of a sort. There were ancient woodcuts depicting Adam and Eve confronting Satan, or angels and cherubim and stallions and obese ladies in impossible positions. We had time to study zoology, little creatures I could not have gotten to know without lots of time, the tiny brown field mice with delicate pink feet, which ran up and down the electric wires and scattered seeds among the picture frames and mattresses of the attic. Those little tiny brown mice were my friends. I would lie on my stomach holding my breath, not moving an eyelash, waiting for them to appear at their holes in the floorboards. Another friend was a little chipmunk who had a hole near the back porch. We would put crackers for him on the step and watch him from a distance as he tore up to seize them and raced back to the hole. That wasn't good enough for me, however. I wanted to look him in the eye. I'm going to continue my story tomorrow. I'll tell you the rest about the little chipmunk.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Discipline, The Glad Surrender, and No Graven Image. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.